So I'd like to start this morning with acknowledging my co-authors. First of all, Dr. James Berner, he's a pediatrician in Anchorage and an expert in children's circumpolar health issues. Jacob Bell, who is global health with a focus in mental health issues. And also John Warren, who is a professional engineer in Anchorage, and he works on rural water and sanitation projects. And I think this grouping of our authors speaks a little bit to the multidisciplinary necessity of developing broad partnerships when we work on climate change issues, and not just within the public health community, but also people that are hydrologists and geologists and people who are climate scientists and people working on wildlife biology and veterinarians. It really depends on the problem and the place you're looking, but partnerships is sort of the name of the game as far as what we've learned in our work. So I work for the statewide tribal health system in Alaska. We run the Alaska Native Medical Center, which is the largest Native American Indian Alaska Native hospital in the country. But we also do a lot of community health work, and we do water and sanitation project engineering, design, and development. And so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how we're beginning to wrap our arms around this whole question of environmental impacts that are rapidly occurring in the Arctic and quite often are related to climate change and health effect. And usually when I do this talk at home, I start with a question. And the question is, how many of you in the audience think you're experiencing climate change-related impacts in the community where you live? And I'd ask for a show of hands. Okay. And how many of you feel that those types of climate change impacts are actually affecting people's health? Okay. All right, well, we're going to look a little bit at some local examples in Alaska. I'm not going to talk at all about projections, about what might happen in the future, about what might happen with changes in weather patterns, because we are so completely absorbed with dealing with past impacts and current impacts that the future modeling efforts, which are important, just don't really factor into our day-to-day work. So, you know what, I think I just missed the slide, which is supposed to say that I don't have any relationships, but I don't, but I would like to thank the U.S. Indian Health Service, who provided the funding for us to sort of model and develop this health assessment process. And so, starting about 10 years ago, we began to hear a groundswell of concerns raised by people all around the state of Alaska from communities saying, you know, there's just some really unusual weather, seasonal, wildlife, other types of environmental change that are occurring in the health system. Is anybody looking at this, and do we have any strategies for how to adapt? And we had started to think about, but we really didn't have a program. So we established this Center for Climate and Health with the mission to identify health effects and develop strategies. And we separated those types of health effects into five categories. Now, there's a lot of discussion about this. I know that National Institute for Environmental Health and CDC, I think they've developed 11 different categories. But in the Arctic context, we're sort of grouping them into five. And so that is acute and chronic disease, and an example of the from the acute disease standpoint, which is ongoing, is warming water and changes in nutrient cycles in the ocean, which is affecting shellfish and shellfish harvesting, and increased incidence, we think, of harmful algal blooms, which can result in things like paralytic shellfish poisoning. And other types of infectious or other things like infectious disease. From the chronic disease standpoint, we're usually looking at things like changes to behavior and changes in diet, because people may not be able to do what they've done or what they do, or at least they can't do it at the same time as they used to. And so we're wondering how that changes people's diet, nutrition, health. Unintentional injury, I think that photo says a lot, but we have to keep in mind that Alaska really is a frozen landscape, especially when you go further north, and it's characterized by what the condition of the sea ice is and what the condition of the frozen land, and that if you're in the permafrost parts of the state, you really have a completely frozen subsurface all for most of the year, and then just some summertime warming that goes down maybe a few meters. So thawing, warming of that entire landscape results in major change, and sometimes it makes it more difficult to travel, and storm events can be more extreme and more unusual than they've seen in the past. Food safety and security, of course, in the native context, people live where they live because that's where the food has always been, and that's where the majority of people's diet comes from. So it's very important, going back also to the chronic disease issues. Water safety and security, when you change the environment, you change the river, you change the groundwater, you change the lake. And also, when the land changes, you change the infrastructure itself. So we have a lot of land settling occurring. It's impacting the infrastructure that has been so painfully and expensively constructed. And we have to look at that. How you site, how you build, and how you operate are all affected. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, mental health. Because when people are living in places that are threatened by disaster or their lifestyle is changing, mental health is one of the first concerns that's raised. Yesterday I was at a talk and someone was talking about the ponderosa pine beetle infestation in the West. We had a similar beetle infestation in Alaska. So Alaska can be a little bit of a canary in a coal mine as far as some of these types of impacts that are occurring. But where I live, and for thousands of miles around where I live, we had widespread infestation of spruce bark beetles, which then resulted in, first and foremost, a lot of grief, a lot of sadness, a lot of fear related to wildfire, and then a time frame of people were sort of recovering from all that. So not to make things grim, but things get better. But mental health is a really important issue. So I'm going to show you examples from three of those categories in this talk. And I also wanted to emphasize the point that it's just not change, because change is, of course, we all know change is always happening, but it's the rate of change. And this is a picture from a coastal community in the northwest of Alaska. After this storm, they're madly trying to use anything they can get their hands on to stop erosion from occurring. But after this storm occurred, there was an evacuation, which was a traumatic event and had lasting mental health has had lasting mental health impacts on the community. But also, from that point on, they've had regular disaster level storm events. And it's not that the weather from the storm standpoint has changed so much. What's changed is the landscape. The landscape is thawed, and because it's thawed, it's much more vulnerable to erosion. And we'll talk about some of the impacts of that. So anything, rate of change is important. And I just went backwards. How did I do that? Let's try this one. There we go. Okay, so let's talk about rate of change. We've probably seen, everyone's seen pictures like this before. And if you are a glaciologist and you're talking about the rate of change in a glacier, well, the fact that Spotted Glacier disappeared over the course of a century is pretty fast change. However, for us working in the public health community, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about changes that are occurring now in the measure of weeks, years for sure, but months, weeks, days, and even hours. And that's the kind of change that people are observing in their communities. So this is the same coastal community, Kivalina, and this is the little river where they get their water from. And we've gone up river to see if there's been any erosion, and lo and behold, the bank has collapsed, you know, about 20 feet back from the shoreline. Okay, so we got a climate change impact. What's happening is the river is a warming mechanism. The air is a warming mechanism. You get thaw of the permafrost further and further back from the side of the river, cracks develop, and erosion occurs. And when you have these really catastrophic collapses like this, from a health perspective, we say, what does this mean for the community water supply? What does this mean for the safety of travel up and down the river and along the shorelines? Because navigation is important in parts of the world where, of course, you know, here there's no roads. And what does it mean for people's ability to access resources they need, like for hunting? So a few challenges. Climate change is occurring rapidly. Most of the work that's been done by climate scientists and by health scientists in rural places where there's small populations are regional. So we have a downscaling challenge. We didn't have a process for doing climate change health assessment. And we were getting a lot of requests and interest from the community level saying, can you connect the dots here between these impacts and effects? The complexity of it, you know, to walk in and say, well, what does this mean when you have a riverbank that's been frozen since the time of the woolly mammoths, and you have all of these interesting things thawing in at the same location you're taking your drinking water from? That requires a lot of different people to answer those kind of questions. So complex problems, and that neither the impacts or the effects were well understood. So let's take just 1 second to look at the large statewide level at what kind of change has actually occurred. And keep in mind this part of the state, because we're going to go visit that in a second. But this is mean annual temperature from National Weather Service. It goes back to 1949. One of the challenges you have when you're trying to connect climate change and health is you may not have good local weather data. And you want precipitation data, you want temperature data, you want, there's lots of other variables that are important. But there was temperature data going back that far, and what you can see is in Alaska, as in most of the Arctic, we're increasing at twice the global level. Although the statewide average for everything is an increase of 3 degrees, the winter average is 6 degrees. Now, 3 degrees may sound a lot to me, I don't know what it means to you, but it's a question of if you are, if you're talking about ice, if you're talking about weather, if you're talking about wildlife, if you're talking about temperature in a pond and the quality of water that happens in it, the temperature, even little changes can result in big tipping points. Just like with a patient, you can reach a fever that is a tipping point temperature. And so I think we have to put temperature change in the same context. The fact that it's 6 degrees may not mean that much, but if it goes up to 6.3.5 and you hit a tipping point, it's a huge deal. And I'm still pushing the direction. So, okay, so let's look at some impacts, environmental impacts. You have a frozen landscape. In the summertime, it thaws down maybe 3 feet and you hit ice. And it's ice 100 or 1,000 feet below that. And there's no bedrock. Okay, and then the temperature raises by 2 or 3 degrees, and you get thaw that's 5 feet every summer. So you have a larger frozen section of land on top of an ice with water running in between. And what happens is, just like with snow, you get a landslide. This is a very unique picture I just saw recently, but you can see what happened is there was a herd of caribou. It walked across the top of this hillside. It created a cut in the hillside, and the land let loose, and it rolled up in this unbelievable fashion, just like you would roll up a carpet. And that's the kind of local observation that people are seeing, and they're like, I just hiked this yesterday, you know? And there it is today. And it's very interesting from an environmental standpoint. From a health standpoint, it's a little bit, maybe there's an effect, maybe there isn't. We don't know anything with that one. But here's another example. This is on the North Slope. This is not rock. That is all frozen ground. So when you have only frozen ground, and the only thing that holds it together is that it's frozen and it thaws, you get these really dramatic and interesting land changes occurring. And this is even without any sort of storm activity. This is just warming, thawing, undercutting, collapsing. So it's a real common pattern we're seeing. Tomorrow I'm going to talk a little bit about different types of indicators. About the same time, about a half mile away from here in the 100s, I'm going to be talking. And this is one of the types of indicators that's really useful in the Arctic. So these are guys who have gone all over the state, and they've put in a whole bunch of temperature meters in the ground in borings. And they're trying to understand what rate of thaw is occurring. And if you look at the red, well, that's warmer than freezing, average temperature year-round at 1 meter depth. If it's white, it's pretty much at freezing. And if it's blue, it's frozen, it's permafrost. The ground is frozen for at least 2 years permanently. That's sort of the definition of permafrost. So this is real data, 1980 to 1989, and we're going to pop up in time a little bit and see what's happened. Okay, so here's 2000 to 2009, and you can kind of see how ground temperature is changing. And when ground temperature changes, of course, we get erosion, we get changes to the surface, and then we also get air temperature change, which means new plants, new wildlife, perhaps new zoonotic disease moving in, new benefits for people who live in cold climates, and also new negative effects. And this is the only projection I have in here. This is from 2050 to 2055. So this is the kinds of things people are doing for planning purposes. Okay. So the response. We're trying to raise awareness. Very important. Because all of those different people in whatever field they work in, we need their help. We need them to think not only about climate impact that they're seeing, but we need them to think about people. And we need them to think about, from their perspective, how we should be engaging in public health. We need a lot more local observation, and that relies on folks like in this picture right here. We need to identify health risks and benefits, and then explore adaptation strategies. And the interesting thing I like about this picture is, in the past, we'd go and we'd talk to the elder about the types of change he's experienced in his community. I spend just as much time talking to the kids now because it's happening in their lifetime. Okay, this is the region where we're working. Again, this is the Northwest. You've got coastal communities. They get their water from ponds. You've got river communities. They get their food from rivers. You've got coastlines where people eat sea mammals. You've got interior communities where people eat reindeer. There's some differences here, but you have a common culture. 2 minutes? Okay. But 8,000 residents, and it's about the size of Illinois with no roads. I'm just going to pop over these. This is the point where I've got 3 minutes left where my slides become one sentence. Okay? Food's important. Coastal Inupiaq community, they live a traditional lifestyle, and they have some unique health disparities. This is an example. This is the community of Kivalina. Very low sea level, very all sandy soil, very expensive to live in a place like this and keep infrastructure running. This community, right now they're talking about relocation. It's a big, big deal from a mental health, from an injury, from all kinds of standpoints. So what the process we're using is pretty much like health impact assessment with a climate twist. We start with an invitation from the community and from the regional health organization. Will you please come and look at this? And then we go in, we do a little background research, and then we talk to a lot of people. And the people we talk to in the community and in the regional context too are health, education, environment, and we ask them in sort of an open-ended discussion, what are you observing in your day-to-day work, in your day-to-day life? What do you think might be the relationship to climate change? We try to ground truth that, because people have perceptions sometimes we think it is climate related, maybe not. And we really pay a lot of attention to the food resource people, the people who are the experts on berry picking and so forth. So let's look at three quick examples of actual impacts in one community. This is Point Hope, the coastal community, and the effect. So our observation from our elder, we used to have frozen meat and blubber in summertime, but they're not frozen anymore. So these guys are harvesting for the entire community. They're taking a whale, they're cutting it up into pieces, they're sticking it in the ground in the permafrost. You know, for thousands of years, 4,000 years, that's been a really good method. Now, however, and you can see in the bottom of this cellar, it's thawing and it's flooding. And as a result, the food is spoiling. Big food security problem, big food safety issue, and we're worried about botulism and salmonella and other things. What do we do about it? Well, the thing we're doing right now is looking into new designs, even using alternative energy to provide a little kicker cooling when needed, and we're putting in temperature meters. And we're also looking at these cellars to see, this one has collapsing walls, so it's kind of a safety issue. Wrap it up, okay. Here, thawing permafrost, lakes are draining. This community relies on their water supply, algae growth, because temperature is changing. We have to relook at the way the water system is provided. This was a slide talking about how many times these guys are changing their filters, and as it gets warmer in the summer, they're getting a lot more algae. The water system that was designed no longer works. Another issue, it used to be you could go out and camp on 10 feet of ice. It was a nice place to camp and watch for whales. Now you're camping on 3 feet of ice and it's moving like this. And you can't even pull your whale out to butcher it. So, you know, very kind of obscure Arctic problems, but it's a big issue, and that's your major food source. And what people are doing about it, this is a personal locator beacon so that if you fall through the ice or your ice breaks free, you'll be able to contact people and use some technology to get help. And we're putting out topic-specific bulletins when there's a real important health issue, and we're developing these community-based climate change reports to try to articulate the problems and what's going on. So there's negative and positive health effects. They're very community-specific, and they're complex. And by using a health impact assessment process at the community level, we're both raising awareness and we're able to bring people in and facilitate discussion about adequate and appropriate adaptation. And I guess the final comment I wanted to say is that in the North, the rate of change is so rapid and climate change is happening so quickly that it's a real challenge for public health. And only by having an equally rapid method of analysis, assessment, and response are we going to prevent negative health outcomes and help to achieve any positive ones that could be achieved. And that's it. Thank you very much.